go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we are. We find ourselves in the middle week of April 2015. It is the 13th day of April, a Monday, 2015. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you want to jump over into the chat room where, at the moment, Gerald, Mo Liberal, Paul, and Sentient are hanging out under the capable tutelage and guidance of moderator Sparky, also known this evening as Man Cave. You too can be there. Just jump on over to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name, pick yourself out a password, and you too will be part of the real-time multimedia experience that is the Horn chat room. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And, yes, it is Moran Monday on the Horn. And I got a feeling we've got an abundance of Morans with whom to work. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, we're going to have fun this evening. We got Morans all over the place. Oh, hey, look, I want to try something new, or not new. It's not new, nothing new. Actually, it's not trying anything at all. But this is the point in the program where during every program, I remind folks that we are a listener-supported enterprise and have been since our very beginning. And that we try to raise $150 a night. But as I mentioned last week, we're struggling to stay current, and we got about $1,000 worth of bills. So what I'm hoping we can do, instead of doing $150 per night, unless somebody wants to do a have a show on me, which is $150, what we're going to do is try to. We're going to count down from 750, which is an ordinary week's fundraising. We're going to count down from $750 instead of $150 an evening, and try to pay bills that way, because it would be nicer to pay them earlier than later in the week, if you know what I mean. But it's just something different. Okay, shall we do that? The PayPal button, the PayPal interface is under the Contribute tab at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Pay no mind to those more really incisively curious fields. Who do you work for? When do you, yada, yada, yada. Now, all you got to do is put enough information into the get to the next screen, and then you're off and running. Credit card, PayPal balance, whatever. And, of course, the tax day, the 15th of April, comes up on Wednesday. And I've had a couple of folks mention to me, hey, Bob, why don't you tell people to kick in some tax refund? I don't know. That's kind of... I love it that a couple of people have thought to do that. But by the same token, So, anyway, it's there. The PayPal interface. And, of course, if you prefer to participate via the traditional U.S. Postal Service method, you can always do that as well, mailing checks and money orders made payable to the Horn, and not to Bob Kincaid, to the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V-25-801. Okie doke, okie doke. So, yeah, it is Moran Monday on the Horn. And we got lots and lots and lots of fun to have. No end of it, really. And we will get into all of it in fairly short order. But first, a little bit of information. And that is this. Starting on Saturday, a petition went live over at Credo Action. Credo being the progressive cell phone carrier. If their signal here was viable in the hills and hollers of almost level West by God, Virginia, I'd use them. It isn't, so I can't. At any rate, act.credoaction.com. This is I had the pleasure of working with the Credo Action folks. Bo Webb and I did. Because they reached out to us and said, listen, we want to help to end mountaintop removal. How can we do that? And, you know, it's really nice when a national organization asks the people of the grassroots how they can help instead of telling us how they can help. So, first of all, big kudos to Credo Action in that regard. And we answered the same, Bo and I did. We said, listen, we've asked the Department of Interior, we've asked the Office of Surface Mine Reclamation Enforcement, we've asked the EPA. We've asked the state DEPs. And nothing ever changes. And then we told them the story of how we got the ACAC. And we told them, you know, what the effort had been and what the ACAC does. And bless their hearts, and I mean that sincerely, not in the backhanded compliment Southern way. Bless them. Credo Action said, all right, we're on board. We're going to start a petition. And it wasn't one of those nebulous, mountaintop removal sucks, let's end mountaintop removal now kind of petitions. This is a rock-solid petition based upon the ACAC. And it can do, it can actually accomplish something. It went live on, I think like noon on Saturday. And so in a little over 48 hours, 54,356 people have signed this petition. Tell Congress, pass the ACE Act and end mountaintop removal mining. Now, I've Facebooked the daylights out of it. I've tweeted it all over the place. And here this evening is the first opportunity I've had to make mention of it in an actual broadcast, because I know there are listeners who don't Facebook, who don't tweet, but who do listen. And so this is for y'all. It's also for folks who do Facebook and do tweet, I'm very pleased to note that a number of the members of the Horn Family Commune congregation have retweeted the, or not retweeted, but shared the Facebook petition. On their own pages. And I'm asking for anybody else who has not yet taken action. This costs you nothing. I'm asking for anybody else who has not yet taken action to take action on this and help us move this petition forward. Because if we're able to go into congressional offices in D.C. and say, look, here's a million people who want this ended. Do you have anything? Do you have anything? Are there a million mountaintop removal workers who want it to continue? Well, for starters, there aren't a million mountaintop removal workers. There's around 4,000 of them in West Virginia. It only takes that many to do that much destruction, to poison as many people as they do. So, if you have a Twitter account, and I know a number of you do, go check my timeline and you'll see my tweets about this petition. You can also follow at Coal, C-O-A-L, River, R-I-V-E-R, MTN, Coal River Mountain, at Coal River MTN, and you'll see tweets there. And if you would be so kind as to retweet it, it would be hugely helpful. If you look on my Facebook page and see the link to the petition and would be so kind as to share it, that too would be hugely helpful. Now, this all goes without saying that, of course, before you share it or retweet it or do anything with it, you're going to go to actact.credoaction, credoaction.com, and you're going to look for the petition, Tell Congress Pass the AIC Act and End Mountaintop Removal Mining, and perhaps sign it. And go forward from there. This is how, here in the second decade of the 21st century, grassroots movements work. I cannot begin to thank Credo Action enough for what they have done here. It is more than a lot of other organizations that consider themselves outright environmental groups have done. So if you will be so kind as to help us, our group, if we got really in earnest about this, could have a pretty good impact on growing this thing. It's a 30-day petition. It's only been live. Well, it's been live for not quite 72 hours, and already over 50,000 signatures. What does that mean it could be in 30 days? That's a lot of people. And it's a lot of people that we can help energize, who can energize this movement for justice, for an end to a public health disaster in Appalachia. And that's huge. That's huge. You know, prior to her announcement of her campaign for president, Huffington Post found a found that a new epilogue had been written for Hillary Clinton's autobiography. I think the name of it is something like Tough Choices or something. Well, I thought you might find this interesting. The story is by Amy Chozick and Maggie Haberman at the New York Times. And, yes, the book is Hard Choices. It's from 2014. And it has a rewritten epilogue for, you know, it was rolled out with her campaign announcement in mind, I have no doubt. What's interesting, however, is a little snippet in that rewritten epilogue. I thought I might share it with you. She writes, "I'm more convinced than ever that our future in the 21st century depends on our ability to ensure that a child born in the hills of Appalachia or the Mississippi Delta or the Rio Grande Valley grows up with the same shot at success that Charlotte is her granddaughter, will. I read that Saturday morning, about had to go running around the room tearing at my hair. Because, see, as long as mountaintop removal persists in Appalachia, no child who is born and grows up in the sacrifice zone will have anything even remotely resembling the opportunities that Mrs. Clinton's granddaughter Charlotte will have." And granted, there's an economic aspect to that. The little Clinton granddaughter has significant wealth advantage over almost any child born in the sacrifice zone. But more than that, if you factor away the wealth advantage, a child born in the sacrifice zone still is behind the eight ball relative to little Charlotte for reasons of public health. Because you see, little Charlotte, as she slumbers in her crib, will never be awakened screaming by the sound of a nearby blast like unto the explosion caused when a Tomahawk cruise missile hits nearby. That's how profound a mountaintop removal blast is. In fact, a mountaintop removal blast is actually often quite bigger, quite more substantial than a Tomahawk cruise missile blast. A lot more substantial. Now, we all know, I think, about what happens when those blasts go off, about the toxic, pernicious amount of dust that goes into the air in tiny, tiny little ultra-fine particles that nothing in the human body can stop. Well, little babies breathe that dust. Mamas breathe that dust. For all I know, the toxic effects of that dust may pass into breast milk. That dust lands on baby's skin. Daddy breathes the dust. Grandma breathes the dust. Grandpa breathe the dust. And in fact, in certain pockets of the sacrifice zone here in central Appalachia, Grandpa has a life expectancy that is less than a Guatemalan peasant's and about equal with a person from Haiti. No slur on Haiti, it's just a fact. We're going backwards in Appalachia, not forward, and it's none of our own doing. Of course, another part of the reason that Appalachian babies will not have the same shot at success that Charlotte will, as Mrs. Clinton wrote, is the fact that many babies start out life itself, behind the toxic eight ball that is mountaintop removal. Because it's worth remembering that pregnant mothers who are subjected to breathing mountaintop removal dust well, put it this way, and you've heard it before, it's worth reminding you. A mother who does not smoke but lives near mountaintop removal has a 180% greater chance of giving birth to a baby with respiratory birth defects than a mother who smokes and doesn't live near mountaintop removal at all. It's hard for a baby to have the same shot at success that Charlotte will when that baby enters life gasping for its first breath upon this planet. Musculoskeletal birth defects attend mountaintop removal communities. Arguably, in light of what later develops as profound depression, attends the childhood of young ones growing up in mountaintop removal communities. And then there is the simple fact that we know now that that blasting dust, when human lung tissue is subjected to it, shows cancerous changes in cell growth. So, the fact of the matter is, without the AIC Act, while her stated desire, and I take it at face value, while her stated desire is laudable, it is also impossible. You could shower Appalachia in money. Until the poisoning stops, it does not matter. Now, I know there are hardships as well in the Mississippi Delta and the Rio Grande Valley. Lord knows down in the Mississippi Delta there's plenty of poisons to be breathed down there, courtesy of the oil industry and the chemical industry. But it's a lot easier to end mountaintop removal than it is to shut down a chemical industry or an oil refinery. One could conceivably, even if we had a country that believed in regulatory structures, one could conceivably come up with a way to keep those facilities from poisoning anyone. There is no way at all. To keep mountaintop removal from being poisonous. It will continue to poison the people and the children, hoping for the same shot at success that Charlotte will, until it ends. So I mentioned that to you just by way of letting you know that there is meaning behind what you do when you go, well, either to my Facebook page, my Twitter feed, or to act.credoaction.com and sign this petition. This is not this petition, as compared to a lot of others. This petition has real things that it can accomplish, and so even if you're not one who is prone to petition signing, I would suggest that this one is worth your time. And if you would help us share it around, you will be part, as you, so many of you have been a part, of advancing the AIC Act toward a day of, justice. A beautiful day. Now, that having been said, and it is 29 minutes past the hour, I'm pleased to announce that, yay, we are off and running on fundraising for this evening. From $750, we have just gone down to $740 to go for the week. Thank you very kindly. Email coming in from Kevin in Colorado Springs, AIC Act petition. I got it, I signed it, I tweeted it out twice now, and plan to tweet it out at least once a day for a while. Signed, Kevin. Thank you, Kevin. You've got about 27 and a half days of tweeting ahead of you. Thank you. very much. Now, like I said, I have a feeling we're going to be having a busy little evening, because Mondays around here can get kind of busy. Yeah, really.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. The Calliope has gotten all hotted up, and you can hear it's going great guns in the background, friends and neighbors. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. It is Moran Monday on the horn. Your chance to behold Morans of all varieties featured right here at the first in the first program of every week. Only here at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Yes, indeed. Right here behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas, you'll find right-wing Morans, birther Morans, ninther Morans, tenther Morans, deather Morans, bagger Morans, bircher Morans, booger-eater Morans, libertarians and Republicans all. You can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. My goodness gracious, I tell you what, ladies and gentlemen, we have Morans for you from all across the fruited plain, and for next to no cost at all. In fact, everything behind the Moran Monday tent is free, save for any donation you care to make. Indeed, we do remind you when going into the Moran Monday tent to hang on to purses, European-style messenger bags, backpacks, fanny packs, children, and small family pet animals, as the Morans, being conservatives, can get grabby. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. Yeah, don't slow down with the Calliope there, son. We got work to do. What do you say we stay in West Virginia for just a minute? This story goes back a couple of days. And on first read, you kind of say, well, yay, hooray, and then you wait. According to WDTV, a television outlet in West Virginia, the West Virginia State Board of Education has had themselves a stunning and stirring vote. Try not to kick furniture when you hear this, okay? Did I mention, friends and neighbors, you might want to have a hockey puck handy? If I didn't, I should have. Sitting down in board assembled, the West Virginia Board of Education has voted to allow classroom debate on climate change. See, I'm as prone as anybody to make mistakes, and I read that and went, well, good. And then I went, wait, what? Because you have to remember how the right wing operate. Remember, teach the controversy? Yeah. WDTV writing, 2 months after citizens bombarded the board with comments at a public hearing, the board voted 6-2 this past Thursday to approve the proposal. Starting next academic school year, students will be allowed to debate on the topic of climate change. People around the community had mixed reactions on whether the students should be debating this subject. Mixed reactions. Well, I guess I've got some mixed reactions, too. What's to debate? See, this would have been a much better story if it said the West Virginia Board of Education has voted to teach the science of climate change in the classroom. That would be a yay hooray moment. as it is, allowing it to be debated. Anybody want to guess what a ninth grade debate on climate change is going to be like in, say, Logan County, West Virginia, down in the sacrifice zone? Well, ain't no climate change. Sorry, he's a little, I don't know, he might not be too grown up for ninth grade now, would he?
There ain't no climate change. My daddy blows up mountains and poisons our family and all of our neighbors every day. And golly gee whiz, I mean, it snowed last winter, and Jesus. So there can't be any climate change. Amen.
Right? Mm-hmm. And the other little kid stands up and says, well, you know, 97% of scientists agree that the climate ill on Earth is changing and it was caused by humans. And the rest of the classroom screams, faggot! Wouldn't it be funny if that was just something I made up? Of course, it's not. This was a way around a deeply embarrassing story that came out a few months ago about a couple of coal-fired jackasses who wanted to teach other alternative theories to human-made climate change. Something about the Earth wobbling on its axis, or the little carbon people inside the sun, or some sort of stupidity. But now, in the schools of West, by God, Virginia, Stan, teachers are going to have debates on climate change. Interviewed for the story by WDTV, Logan Colley said, bringing in both perspectives, then basically you can say, this is what I believe, and this is what you believe, so let's discuss what it is. Because, you know, science is a religion just like everything else. And you can believe in gravity, or else you can just float away. Mm-hmm. You can believe in the laws of chemistry, or you can drink hydrogen peroxide and think, well, hell, water's H2O, and that's H2O2, and I mean, what the hell's one? Dottie Harbert said, in my eyes, no. There is a lot many more important things to teach, you know. Let's get back to the basics. I mean, we need to teach them how good coal is for West Virginia. Caitlin Davis said, I feel strongly about it. I think every child should know what's going on instead of being hidden from what's going on behind them. I know, Caitlin, but dig it. They're going to debate it, not teach it. Kind of reminds me of the biology teacher my kids had in high school, who is a young earth creationist. What kind of biology instruction do you think they got about, say, the theory of evolution? Well, I'll tell you what kind of... They got instructed that it's just a theory. Told you we'd be busy. And we're going to be busy all over the place. How's about we run down to Florida, Stan, where an eighth grader is in some serious, deep stuff. The Tampa Bay Times has the story. An eighth grader down there, whose name should not have been released, really, being as how he's an eighth grader, assuming he's not a 19-year-old eighth grader. An eighth grader down there has been charged in Pasco County, Florida, with offense against a computer system and unauthorized access. Here's the fun part. The eighth grader has been charged with a felony, because that really scary sounding crime is a scary crime. It's a felony. The crime is designed to prevent instances of hacking. Now, in the rest of the world, he may be just a smart-alecky eighth grader, but in Florida, he's a cyber terrorist! Really? How did this come to be? Well, ever been around an eighth grader or someone old enough to be in the eighth grade? I don't care if they are the most angelic human being on earth. They're going to be trying sometimes, because kids that age are supposed to be. They're on the cusp between childhood and adolescence, and they're testing boundaries and seeing it right. I mean, you'd think this kid was behind the Sony hacking or something. Hacked by hashtag GOP. No, it turns out that he logged on to his teacher's computer, and it was password protected and everything, only teacher had simply used his last name. The young man said, so I logged out of that computer and logged into a different one, and I logged into a teacher's computer, who I didn't like, and tried putting inappropriate pictures onto his computer to annoy him. Mm-hmm. That's felonious conduct by an eighth grader in the state of Florida. Now, what did the young man change the wallpaper picture to? A couple of guys kissing. Unfortunately for the eighth grader, that teacher wasn't even at school that day, and instead it was noted by a substitute who immediately went brooga, 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 to the principal's office. Woo, two men kissing on the computer. I've read several accounts of this story, and I have yet to see that it was two naked men kissing. And so the authorities of Pasco County, Florida, have decided to make the young man an example to other potential computer malfeasers. Pasco County, Florida, Chris Nocco, said, "Even though some might say this is just a teenage prank, who knows what this teenager might have done?" Pre-crime. So, let that be a lesson to you, eighth grader, as you're sitting in the big house. Because I'm sure the prosecutor will want to have him tried as an adult. Mm-hmm. Why not? Yeah, it's all funny until a fundy has to see two men kissing, and then they have to run screaming and they have to pour holy water in their eyes. Oh, for pity's sake. Note coming from Ron in Raleigh. Hey, Bob. Since I just got my bank account hacked, I say string the little felonious miscreant up. Because, you know, putting a picture of a couple of guys kissing on computer wallpaper, that is exactly the same as hacking into someone's bank account or telling the world all the rotten things that the head of Sony Studios said about President Obama. Well, think of two guys kissing as a gateway hack. I mean, it's just a prank. It's just a kid, some little adolescent, putting a picture of two guys kissing on some homophobe's desktop wallpaper. But from there, what? I mean, the next thing you know, he's carrying out pranks by walking into good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christian bakeries in Florida and ordering pizza for gay weddings that aren't even taking place. This is a case for Barney Fife.
Nip it! Nip it! Nip it in the bud! Gotta nip it, Ange!
Yeah, my Barney's terrible. More in Monday. Just another day. And then, because stories like this really just never go out of fashion on More in Monday. I mean, this would even likely make the Calliope hoot. You will want the hockey puck for this one. Because it's just too dang much fun. The story comes to us from one Dory O'Brien, who is not kin to Dottie, what's her name? No, she's not. And it comes from, of all places, from New York. Little tiny school in New York. And I think we mentioned this a couple of weeks ago. There was a firestorm of hissy fitting thrown by teabaggers, mostly, because the school was celebrating something like world languages, and every day somebody did the Pledge of Allegiance in a different language. Well, that was all well and good until some little punk come up and done the Pledge of Allegiance in that Arab language. I know, wrong accent.
let's cut to the audio, shall we? And Ms. Dory O'Brien, don't just no. Look, go ahead. I know it's early, but still, take a couple of passes with the duct tape around the hockey puck once you get it firmly ensconced in your mouth. Okay.
In the United States, like law, politics, entertainment, like in movies and books and videos.
Wait a minute, doesn't she sound a little like Victoria Jackson? That's what I thought.
God is working in about every circle of influence you can think of in the United States, like law, politics, entertainment.
That word, in case you missed it, jihad is working in all those places.
Like in movies and books and videos, in advertising and in publishing. Have you guys really noticed calendars lately, that the Islamic holy days are in all the calendars?
Yep.
And how
really?
How few Muslims there are in this country? Last week, the students at the Pine Bush High School in Pine...
And you know what that probably is? That's probably a hot jihad wind blowing across her microphone, trying to keep her truth telling from being told. Have you noticed that there's all them dates on the calendar and all the Muslim holy days is on it? I mean, it's one thing to have Christian holy days, and well, I reckon, I mean, being how it's New York, we can probably have some of them Jew holy days too. But really, Muslim holy days? No! Jihad!
Bush, New York, nearly went berserk because the student body president was reciting the pledge, One Nation Under Allah, over the intercom system in Arabic.
One Nation Under Allah over the intercom system in Arabic. I didn't even know schools in America had intercom systems in Arabic. It's sneaky, that Sharia law. They're everywhere. Once they done got him a Kenyan Muslim, you slurper in the White House, well, the barn door was open, wasn't it? It just was. It was.
Reaction was plenty crazy, I understand, when the New York High School was swift, and so was the backlash. Furious students tried to shout down the recitation in their classrooms. Other students sat down in protest.
Ma'am? Two words. Wind screen. Yeah, they look like Muppet noses. Only they're kind of like condoms for your microphone to keep some of that from... Oh, why bother? Never smarten up a chump.
The outrage among the students was so significant that the school issued an apology. Again, a first. This is fantastic. But this happened for the wrong reason. The school was celebrating world languages.
World languages? Oh, noes! Everybody knows that we don't need to be speaking no language, anything but English, which is what Jesus taught. World languages. World jihad languages, more like. World Sharia languages.
Some such thing. Multiculturalism. Socialism, in other words.
And any other word that happens to end in ism. Except jism. Because that's just filthy.
There is a whole lot wrong with pledging to the flag in Arabic.
A whole lot wrong. Not a little bit wrong.
a whole lot wrong with pledging to the flag in Arabic, because the flag can't hear in Arabic. The flag don't speak Arabic. It only speaks American, big AAA, so we all can understand.
The language of the people trying to kill us. But the schools should be celebrating English.
But wait a minute. Back 200 years ago, or a little more, wasn't people trying to kill us speaking of English?
Remember that science fiction movie? What was it? The Fantastic Journey, where they miniaturized a bunch of little scientists and put them inside a little tiny cellular submarine and sent it into another scientist's body to cure his tumor or something with laser beams so that he could go on being a famous scientist discovering wonderful stuff?
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
The language of the people trying to kill us. But the schools should be celebrating English. I don't think we should have to have a celebrate world languages.
No. Because if it was good and good for Paul and Silas, it was good enough for me.
But really, it would be kind of fun to micro-miniaturize one of them little tiny submarines full of tiny, tiny scientists and send it into her little teabag brain, wouldn't it? It'd just fly out the other ear, wouldn't it? And a little guy with a little star, little foam rubber catcher's mitt on the other. Yep, nothing even slowed it down. Barbie noting, let's all just stay stupid, shall we? Yeah, I think Barbie's got a good point. She says, I think this woman's lying. I think those adults in some position of power probably directed those kids to sit down and not participate. Robert in Morgantown pointing out, of course, except the capitalism that we love, and maybe Calvinism.
Right, yeah.
Of the people trying to kill us, but the schools should be celebrating English. I don't think we should have to have a celebrate world languages.
Because the next thing you know, we'll be celebrating Japanese and German and Spanish. And we got enough Spanish speakers in Merck already. I'm tired of calling customer service and being told to marque el nueve when I don't even know what that means. God, I fear for America. Next thing you know, they're going to have our little young ones going to play basketball in the gymnasium. Dan, via email, pointing out, she sounds like Emily Latilla, the old Gilda Radner dingbat character from Saturday Night Live. Well, see, is it, yeah, because,
what's all this about sex and violins?
Well, never mind.
Yeah, but there's also something in that dippy, high-pitched voice that sounds so Victoria Jackson.
Please, for God's sakes, don't make me find Victoria Jackson audio to play alongside it just to prove my point. No, I can't. I can't. Really, I can't.
New York Mayor Bill de Blasio just shoved two Islamic holy days down the throats of all New York non-Muslims by insisting.
Oh, my God, did you hear how the Sharia wind came up when she started talking about how New York Mayor Bill de Blasio just shoved two Muslim holidays down the throats of New York school children? Well, if New York schools are using Aramark for their food delivery, that's probably better than having food that's been thrown in the garbage shoved down their throat. But there I go equivocating again. See what it's like when you're a liberal. Everything's just relativism.
That the public schools be closed on two of the Islamic holy days. De Blasio is a dhimmi, and he's paying his jizya, which is the Islamic second-class citizen poll tax, because, after all, the Muslim Brotherhood was very active in getting him elected.
Really? The Muslim Brotherhood was? It wasn't the new Black Panther Party? I can't keep up with their paranoias. I really, really can't. I never imagined that the Pledge of Allegiance could cause damn much trouble. But it does. Let's cross the border from New York into Pennsylvania. I'm reminded at this point of what my good friend Rick Smith says about Pennsylvania, that it's Philly in the east and Pittsburgh in the west and Alabama in the middle. So in a school, Wilson Middle School in the Carlisle Area School District. Carlisle, of course, famous for having once had one of those pernicious Indian schools that tried to strip young indigenous children of their entire cultural heritage. That's where a young Native American man named Jim Thorpe learned to play football. That worked out so well for Jim Thorpe. An eighth grade student at Wilson Middle School this past April 2nd refused to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. Oh, here are some more of those damned closely held religious beliefs again. After the young woman refused to stand for the pledge, the school nurse came up to her. Nurse Ratched? No, she didn't tell her she couldn't have fruit cups. She said, "Why didn't you stand for the pledge? Pledge!" Little girl said, "Well, I have the right not to participate in the pledge." And the nurse said, "Fine, then leave. I have the right not to service you." And by this time, the nurse was screaming. Then the child left the nurse's office in tears, having been screamed at by the school nurse, and she went to the school office to call her mama to come and get her. That's when Nurse Ratched comes barreling around the corner and says, "She isn't calling a parent until I have a long conversation with her." Then the guidance counselor got involved, and the young woman tried to explain to her that she has no obligation to stand in the hallway no obligation to stand for the pledge. And then the counselor said, well, it's district policy.
The according to ABC 27 News, the Carlisle School District has said that
they're aware of the allegations and they're investigating. The district is not permitted to disclose details of the investigation and cannot comment on situations involving specific students or staff.
Now, one of the more interesting aspects of this story is that the young woman was in the nurse's office to begin with when the pledge was ordered up. To be treated by the school nurse for reasons we know not what. Stop it, Devin. I'm trying to explain that. Service or how? But so basically this boils down to a refusal to treat based upon an exercise of a clearly delineated civil right. Yeah, it is odd language, Devin, but remember we're talking about a right-wing nurse, and well, very odd language is often used by very odd people. Yeah. So that's the beginning, by no means the end, of Moran Monday. Is it an eighth grade thing? Little eighth grade cyber terrorist in Florida. Little eighth grade heathen, anti-American in Pennsylvania, and probably not much more than an eighth grader up there. Pledge an allegiance to the flag of Allah. See, eighth graders. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what is that, about 14-year-old? Yeah, that means that in the entire time that they've been in the government school system, they ain't known nothing but an America led by a Kenyan Muslim usurper president. And now it's beginning to bear fruit. America is doomed unless we can somehow manage to elect a man of God like Rafael Teodoro Cruz. American. Well, not really. Well put, Robert, in Morgantown. What that woman wants is tyranny of the majority. And while it is the majority, it is still nonetheless tyranny. Barbie with a question. Why offer Latin, Spanish, German, French? It is the exact same thing. Well, yeah. And we also know that foreign languages are really good for expanding the
the intellectual capabilities of children, but here in exceptional America, we like our children monolingually exceptional. Yeah. Don't want to have anybody walking around saying Dankeschön or algebra or, well, it's like Dim Leader said all those years ago now. You know what the problem with the French is? They don't have a word for entrepreneur. Devin says, eighth grade is the tail end of my generation, and they don't suffer fascists to lord over us. So it's 12 minutes past the hour, and here endeth Philip Obster. Let's see. Let's check in. Check in with the mailbag. Ah, good little crowd joining the chat room this evening. Good evening, Devin and Dr. Who, 4 of 9, Gerald, Kathy, Kelly, Mo Liberal, Sentient Being, Texas T, and Truth Seeker. Good evening, one and all. Mo Liberal pointing out, Bob could do 6 hours every day covering just the morons and still barely scratch the surface of this disease infecting every aspect of our society. I'm afraid, Mo Liberal, you are. Correct. This is Steve in New York. Why are you bringing reason into it? Silly Bob! Steve also says, "Don't in regard to the election of Bill de Blasio by the Muslim Brotherhood, don't forget those of us in the Pink Mafia." I like pink. Robert in Australia says, can I do the old joke? In the U.S., you speak American, not English. And yes, it was 1966. 1966's Fantastic Voyage. Scientists are miniaturized and placed in the body of a defecting Russian who has the secret of permanent miniaturization to remove a blood clot on his brain. I thought it had something to do with the brain. And that's why I thought that if we did it to Mrs. Teabagger lady, they're hooting about the Ferner languages. Like I said, just put a little catcher's mitt on the other side of her head and the little miniature submarine will zip right through her flying saucer or whatever it is. Right, and Robert is alluding, of course, to, I think, something said by George Bernard Shaw when he noted that the Americans and the English are two people separated by a common language. Or that, the English can barely speak their own language. The Americans don't understand it at all. Ron noting simply, where am I going? And what am I doing in this handbasket? Devo had it right. We're devolving rapidly. And by the way, big thanks going out to Harold. Thank you, Harold. We are now at $540 to go on fundraising for the week, trying to get bills paid earlier rather than later. Thank you very kindly. That's pretty huge. Let's see if we can keep that going. Thank you again, Harold. Steve in China with a query. Doesn't a healthcare provider have some sort of legal as well as ethical responsibility to provide the requisite service in spite of political views? And since when is any school nurse in any way concerned with classroom etiquette or matters? Somebody remind me to come back to this after the break, because I think we've got a rather unpleasant answer to that question. Yeah. So it's 15 minutes past the hour. And yeah, a little break, and then we'll fire up the conversation. The Gizmo line, and somebody's already on it, is 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. You can also reach via Herald, the Herald line. We used to call it the Skype line, but it confuses people when we call it that, so we'll just call it Herald. And when you say, when you hear me say, on the Herald line, you'll know it's you, 304-574-8178. Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn. See how easy? And email is simply BobKincaid@gmail.com. Twitter, @BobKincaid. You see a pattern here? And on Facebook, no, really, Bob Kincaid. We try to make it a little easy. You know, we're going for that sort of little C Catholic universality there with all the right. Okay, break. This is the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be right back.
I had a lot of potential choices for that bumper, but I'll be candid. I could, honest to God, I could listen to Natalie Merchant sing the ingredients on the side of a toothpaste tube and think it was beautiful. I don't know what it is about her voice, but wow. Of course, that goes all the way back to her 10,000 Maniacs days, In My Tribe, 1987. Yeah, really. Jesus Christ, 28 years ago. I know there's good modern music out there. I've entered my geezerhood. This is the Horn. Moran Monday is what we call what we do on Mondays. And before I run over to the phones, I don't want to forget what it was that Steve in China made me think about. But before that, a note from Robert in Australia. When I was a kid, they used to play the national anthem in the cinema. And when I was a kid, it was God Save the Queen. Yawn. We all had to stand up while it was played. There was QE2 sitting on a horse surrounded by lots of guys with dead bears on their heads. They stopped doing it when people stopped standing up for it sometime in the middle late 60s. The Australian national anthem is currently Advance Australia Fair. I thought it was Waltzing Matilda. And one of the dullest things you'll ever hear. That's kind of like, yeah, I know. I'm showing my cultural ignorance. That's like thinking that Sweet Home Alabama is the state song of Alabama, or Take Me Home Country Roads is the state song of West Virginia. I mean, it just happens to, well, anyway. I'll have to listen to Advance Australia Fair, which Robert says is one of the dullest things you'll ever hear. I don't know the words. No one knows the words. Our kids don't swear allegiance to a flag every morning at school, and no one really cares about all that stuff any longer. Oh, just you wait, Robert. Let one good global conflagration come on. I mean, you're still celebrating Anzac Day, aren't you? Yeah. Just one good conflagration where a lot of the population can go off and get blown into molecular-sized bits of their constituent parts, and everybody will be singing again. Yeah. Okay, so back to what Steve in China wrote. Doesn't a healthcare provider have some sort of legal as well as ethical responsibility to provide the requisite service in spite of political views? And since when is any school nurse in any way concerned with classroom etiquette or manners? Can't answer the second one, except insofar as these pushy little right-wingers, these teabaggers, these birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, booger-eating bircher baggers, they're concerned with everything. But as to the business about legal and ethical responsibilities to provide the requisite service, Steve, can I ask a question? When did you stop being Steve in the United States and start being Steve in China? I don't ask that insultingly, and I'm not trying to pry, but the fact of the matter is, I think you've been gone a while. Dateline, Georgia. Milledgeville, Georgia. According to WGXA-TV, Action Team News Coverage, Action Team Eyewitness News Coverage, Milledgeville, Georgia, and a woman by the name of Brittany Cartwright. She doesn't seem to be bothered by having her name out there in public, so I'll share it. Brittany Cartwright. And any woman who has ever suffered one of these, and any man or woman who has ever cared about a pregnant woman who has gone through one of these knows that it is absolutely hell. Brittany Cartwright had a miscarriage. A miscarriage is a term that we use, and I'm not particularly fond of it. You know how I'm all about the knowing of words and stuff like that. I'm not particularly fond of the term miscarriage, because to carry, it's an active verb, and it implies somehow or another that the mother didn't be pregnant right. Yeah, kind of like hysterectomy means that we're removing the hysteria of a woman, which is another way of saying we're taking out her reproductive organs, because the reproductive organs were
deemed by people long, long ago to be the seat of why women get so daggummed hysterical, when it may have simply been a matter of the fact that she got a little disgusted with the fact that her Roman senator husband couldn't stand to keep his toga hanging all the way to his ankles and was forever hitching it up for, you know, whoever was back behind the hummus stall.
Right.
Well, regardless of the language, Brittany Cartwright had a miscarriage. And I don't even know if we can call this a miscarriage at 5 weeks of pregnancy. Our dear friend Beth in Dallas may be able to speak to that a little better than I. A lot better than I. Who am I kidding? But she was 5 weeks pregnant, and then she wasn't pregnant anymore. Now, granted, the fetus frightening industry, the anti-women's insides industry, would like, you know, sweet granny McWhatever, sweet granny McStuffy up in Massachusetts, she'd like you to think that at 5 weeks a toddler fell in the toilet. But it didn't. A little bit of tissue. But it can be medically problematic. Infections can set in, that kind of thing. So, Ms. Cartwright went to the doctor, which is the appropriate thing to do, if you can in America. Not everybody can go to the doctor when they need medical care in America, because this is the greatest country on earth. So her doctor verifies what had happened and writes her a prescription for a substance called misoprostol. I don't know which syllable gets the emphasis, frankly. Misoprostol. Misoprostol. And Brittany Cartwright then takes her prescription and goes over to her local Wally World. I mean, everybody goes to Wally World because they got everything you need there. If you need it and Wally World don't have it, you don't really need it. Yeah. So she takes her prescription, duly executed by a physician authorized to practice medicine in the state of Georgistan, and she hands it across the counter, and the pharmacy tech, gone a minute, and comes back and hands her the script and says, "We're not going to fill this." So then, Brittany Cartwright has to go back out to the parking lot, negotiate the Joey Chitwood thrill show stunt car extravaganza that is any day in any Wally World parking lot, and she drives over to somewhere else in Milledgeville and manages to get her prescription filled. Then later on, she goes back and she's got another prescription and decides to go back to Wally World. And she asks, "Why didn't you fill my prescription for misoprostol?" And the woman across the counter, she looks at my name and she says, "Oh, well, I couldn't think of a valid reason why you would need this prescription." Ms. Cartwright said, "I tell her my reasons for needing it." She says, "Well, I don't feel like there's a reason why you would need it, so we refuse to fill it." So then WGXA contacted one of the pharmacists for the Milledgeville, Georgia Wally World, an individual by the name of Sandip Patel. And Sandip Patel said, "We are absolutely allowed to refuse to fill any prescription we want because we have a conscience clause in Georgia." The law in Georgia says a pharmacist, quote, "shall not be required to fill a prescription for an emergency contraceptive drug, even if it's not a contraceptive drug. Even if it's a drug that is designed to help a woman not get infected and die after a miscarriage." See how it works? Ms. Cartridge said, "I'm not going to see that pharmacist. I'm going to see a doctor. If it's because of that, due to the conscience clause, I think it's called, then what other decisions are they making based on our health and our needs by not giving a prescription to someone who may or may not need it?" Wally World said that, "We encourage our pharmacists to use their professional judgment on a case-by-case basis." Well, what kind of professional judgment did they have? The people at the Wally World in Milledgeville, Georgia, decided that they would insert and interject their professional judgment ahead of the professional judgment of Ms. Cartridge's physician. Remember how Republicans are all about small, limited government? Well, they are, but they're okay if the government wants to make a decision about a woman's womanly innards. And in particular, if Wally World wants to, be her doctor? No. See, you carry the sin of Eve, darling, and that means if your woman lady parts get all infected and stuff, that's just because God wants you to die, you hussy. Walmart. Low values every day. And you can just hear Tina or Tammy or whatever her name is across the counter, can't you? "Oh, well, I couldn't think why a valid reason why you would need this prescription. I don't feel like there's a reason you'd need it, so we refuse to fill it." How far is that from "you don't need this because you're the wrong color"? You see, here's the problem. And this is where it gets interesting. Misoprostol does exactly what it's designed to do in the case of the follow-up after a miscarriage. But if you use it in conjunction with mifepristone, it can terminate a pregnancy in its earliest stages. So when Tina or Tammy across the counter got the prescription, she looked at it and said, "Oh, she's going to murder some poor little fetus baby," and went running to Sandip Patel, and he said, "We can't be party to fetus baby murder. Tell her to go away." And Tina goes back and says, "The great and powerful Oz, I mean Sandip, says for you to go away and not come back, huzzy." So while I am sure that it is not the answer you wanted, Steve, in China, that's the reality. Yeah. Let's run over to the Gizmo line. I think we got Jim and... Are you still in Louisiana, Stan, Jim?
For about till about Wednesday at 9 a.m.
Awesome.
That Natalie Merchant was great. She's got a beautiful voice. Her solo album, I forgot which one it was, about 10, 15 years ago. It was incredible. But half of my music critique. That's incredible with that, I guess she was a pharmacist dead. Cause it's like, alright, like I take phenobarbital because of two brain surgeries that Jesus gave me, two brain aneurysms, and because of scar tissue, phenobarbital. And so what if some pharmacist thinks, well, that's God's will that you have diseases?
Yeah. I mean, what if you run up against it? What if you take your phenobarb strip to, let's say, the Wally World of Milledgeville, Georgia, and you say, and they say, Jesus doesn't want you to have this, and we've judged your prescription on a case by case basis, and you'll just have to get it somewhere else.
Yeah,
I'm not trying to say scary stuff, but what happens if you have a seizure because you just, on the way out the door?
God's will.
God's will.
Yeah.
Because God loves you.
Yeah. Now you'll be back like George Carlin. Why? He's going to send you this horrible place. Why? Because he loves you.
There you go.
That kind of logic just doesn't really work with me. And then, like, the first thing we talked about, what was it? That woman, about the school. And
on the Pledge of Allegiance, and they pledged, they made our precious little American children pledge allegiance to jihad Allah. That one.
Well, the thing is, yeah, that, because that's to me, and it's just what my mind thinks, but I was thinking, you know, religion's just a misguided belief you have. I mean, kind of like to me, like, you know, the lone gunman theory at Dealey Plaza, or what the Christian church, the Catholic church did to Galileo, because he said the earth was not the center of the universe. They got their, you know, their panties all in a uproar about that. You know, there's just numerous things throughout history and throughout different cultures. I'm just more aware of it here. But, it's just, some people just, I don't know, need to take a step back.
You mean backward, back off? That's a big step to take all the way back to the Middle Ages.
Well, I mean, just take a step back and look at what's going on. But people have so little sense of history that's useless anyway. I mean, it's, you know, like I think I've talked to you before about how, I would say most of the Christians I know, whatever sect they're in, they probably don't know that much difference, except theirs is the right one between the Catholics and the Protestants, you know? They don't know about Martin Luther, and, I mean, they might, and I asked the guy that once, because I think his dad was a preacher, but he didn't seem to know much about it. Because I asked him who Martin Luther was, he goes, who do you mean, Martin Luther King? I'm like, no, I did a little bit further back in history.
Yeah, he was actually named after somebody.
Yeah, and
it's like the fact that, you know, there was a Cassius Clay before Muhammad Ali.
Right, right, and it's just, you know, those kind of people, they're all over the place. I imagine, I know they have some even in Colorado, especially once you get to the, I guess they got some red areas out there.
Oh, are you kidding? Do not go any. I mean, unless maybe you want to go have lunch with Kevin or something. Do not go anywhere near Colorado Springs.
Yeah.
I mean, the next thing you know, Jim, they'll have you goose stepping and singing. I was about to say one armed Christian soldiers, but no, onward Christian soldiers. Ooh! See what Mondays do to me.
Yeah. Well, they would.
No, actually, it's well-armed Christian soldiers. God, my staggered. Yep, but I'm okay.
No, but I made my decision to go up there. I was aware of that, because it's like once you get, just like out in Vegas, once you get out of the smaller areas, it gets a lot more countryfied. It's like something I saw on Twitter last night. It was about it had to do with the decriminalization of marijuana and why some states, in particular Louisiana was one, but it was just like, and a lot of them were southern states, but they're all also like Oklahoma, Nebraska, why they were going to be so strongly against it. And it's just mind-boggling, you know. So I guess, you know, and then the article, they even pointed out, like, prohibition wasn't repealed in some areas. You still have dry counties. You still have, it was like not until 68, some areas, 66, didn't even start enforcing it. I mean, not enforcing it, allow, you know, alcohol to be sold.
Yeah.
Pretty sure it might, right?
Oh, yeah. I grew up in a dry county.
Well,
I mean, North Alabama was, well, except for, you know, the heathens in Huntsville, and that's only because they had rocket scientists. We were bone dry until 1980.
Well, yeah, so, yeah, just as things seem to be progressing along, there's always some knuckle draggers trying to, get back to the good old days. Well, that's my little Jim Bobster. For the day.
You're not an actually Jim Bob, are you?
I've been called that before, but I just go by Jim. But if you want to call me Jim Bob, that's all right.
Oh no, I was just curious. I'm happy.
No, I've been Jim Bob. I mean, except for maybe in reference to Bob Dobbs, Jim Bob Dobbs, Church of the Subgenius.
Absolutely, yeah.
Right. Yeah, but other than that, just Jim. So.
Exactly.
I'll let you go. Let somebody else get through.
All right, you take care, Jim. Have a good evening.
All right.
Bye now. Our buddy Jim calling from, and for not too much longer, Louisiana stand. Note coming from Jack in Shreveport. Subject line, Wally Pharma. Had the woman needing the prescription gone to the pharmacy one day earlier or later, perhaps a different pharmacist would have been there and filled the prescription. Seems there's no real policy. If the pharmacy isn't going to fill all prescriptions for that medicine, why have it in stock? Well, because Jesus trusts Wally World more than he does licensed physicians, because some of them physicians is just little fetus baby killers. Ron and Raleigh asking, tell me, how far are we from A Handmaid's Tale? It truly gets worse every day. Or the other way to describe it is Margaret Atwood looks a little more like a prophet every day and not a writer of fiction. Stephen China says, point taken, I was asking more in the sense of believing that a healthcare nurse is held to as similar a standard of conduct as, say, a first responder or other on-scene professional. Seems to me there are a few of these around nowadays, and at least some schools would be concerned about massive lawsuits rather than making mealy-mouthed excuses for bad conduct on the part of their employees. Steve continues, and yes, I've been away for a while, but I do get back occasionally. Things are terribly deteriorated from my perspective and getting worse. I don't recognize much about what I can remember, rose-colored glasses or not. That could be one reason I'm only feeling a little homesick, but really the Chinese will pay me a fairly decent salary to do what I do, and they won't work me to death in the process, you know, like back there. As for a school nurse over here, I should think her career would be unpleasantly terminated if she did something like that. And let's run over to the Herald line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hey, Jim.
How are you tonight?
Trying not to exit screaming, you know.
Well, I can certainly understand that. First thing, I want to wish your last caller his pleasant and productive removal from Louisiana to Colorado, that's for sure.
Thank you. on Jim's behalf.
Oh, absolutely. I just sent you an email, and this is the thing, we're talking about health and stuff like this. And I just happened to cut on the internet this afternoon. First thing I saw, one of the Kardashians, or I call them the Kardashians, is having uterine surgery. Why is that on the internet?
You want the quick one? Because the Kardashians, if the Kardashians go pee-pee in the morning, there's somebody there to write a story and put it out on the internet and feature it with color photos in People magazine, because the Kardashians are famous for being famous. They've never done anything worthwhile with their lives. I mean, Bruce Jenner was sort of a famous triathlete who didn't do much. Did he win? I mean, I know you follow the Olympics. I don't. Did he win the triathlon or the marathon or whatever in the Olympics? I don't think he did. Did he?
I don't know, Bob. I follow the Olympics to a certain extent because the 70s sport has always interested me, and the Panoply and stuff like that, the opening, closing ceremonies, and, you know, a certain devotee of American athletes competing in a fair sport situation. But the thing about it is, comparing news and reportage, last night I recorded this a long time ago, and I pulled it up, and it was called Good Night, Good Luck, about Edward R. Murrow and the hell he had to go through in his fight to Senator Joe McCarthy. Now, that was truly news reportage. I mean, this man went through absolute hell with CBS, and CBS backed him to a certain extent. And there was a lot of...
He had to fight all the way.
Oh, absolutely, and Alcoa certainly wasn't exactly one of his main supporters, and, you know, everything was gauged upon money and how much money and this, that, and the other. But I urge anyone who has not seen that film, Good Night, Good Luck, about Edward R. Murrow, done with a stellar cast, and compared to that, what we have now, it's just crap. It really is.
You've read Fahrenheit 451, right? Probably years ago, but remember how everybody in Fahrenheit 451 was sucked into the... They had huge TVs that covered the walls of all four walls, and you could have a multimedia experience where you were part of the show, and everybody was all wrapped up in what was going on in whatever program it was. Well, this is that, Jim. This is that. We have a society of manufactured, we manufacture people's disinterest in their own lives in favor of fascination with the bigger, more beautifuler lives of the bigger, more beautifuler people.
You know, I can remember when they first started this crap. I think it was on Wii TV, and they had this thing about Anna Nicole Smith, and they followed her around. And it was just absolutely, you know, when I first saw it, I thought, "Oh Lord, what is this got to do?"
Well, but take it even further back. I remember. Wow, I feel shallow even mentioning this. Hang on a minute. I remember. I think I was leaving for college when the Luke and Laura saga was unfolding on General Hospital.
Oh God. Yeah, I can remember. I've never watched it.
And the Luke and Laura thing, I mean, was a cultural phenomenon that went pretty near global.
And do you know who was the first one to make fun of that?
Who?
Roseanne.
Well, that very well may be, but what I'm getting at though is that was just an instance of it getting big. There was Soap Opera Digest for sale at the checkout line. I think it probably still even exists. And people getting wrapped up in soap opera plot lines. And I don't know, as far back as ancient Ur or Sumer, I'm sure there were people who sat drinking barley beer, waiting for the next installment of the Epic of Gilgamesh.
I talked to someone who was a devotee of that soap opera, and I just asked her, quite frankly, I said, if you miss it for a year and came back a year later, would it take you too long to catch up? Answer was, no. I said, you like this show. I said, is the plot line that less fragmented?
I remember the old joke that a soap opera was the only place in the universe where it took a woman 13 months to have a premature baby.
I know. The only one I can remember ever having any type of interest in, and then it got pretty boring for me when I was in high school, was Dark Shadows.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And at least that had some type of gothic mystique to it or whatever,
Yeah.
The folks, what they were doing at Collingwood, and how was Barnabas going to be recovered from his vampirism, but I thought to myself, this is boring. I mean, my mother used to watch it every day. And when I come home from school, she would say, I just said, I'm not interested, Mom. I said, just let me know when he comes out of the TV and bites you in the neck. Then I'll come in and watch.
You were a little bit of a challenge to raise, I guess.
In so many ways, let me tell you. But nonetheless, that was her thing, as an American housewife, single family, that type thing. And that was her, it was novel to her. But I mean, she'd read all the vampire classics and stuff like that, particularly one by Bram Stoker and that and the other. And who knows why she'd be interested in that. Maybe it was the sexual type of thing about the vampire. But nonetheless, this whole thing is just ridiculous. And going back to We with Anna Nicole Smith, then you had Howard Stern doing all kinds of bizarre things on the air. And I'm not going to even insult your audience by mentioning what he was doing with that.
And just to fill in a gap, Jethro popped into the chat room. Say hi to Jethro, Jim.
Hello, Jethro. I love you.
Let me know that Bruce Jenner did, in fact, win the gold in the decathlon in the Summer Games in Montreal in 1976.
Oh, God, that was a long time ago.
Yes, it was.
Absolutely. 76. Jesus, Lord have mercy. But the thing about it, the whole thing is, if this is part of American reportage and we have to resort to the Cardassians, and people like that who are absolutely nothing. Just nothing. Just white trash. And that's basically what they are. And who in the hell would sign them to a contract? And they've been renewed.
But it's pure P.T. Barnum, Jim. Okay? I mean, nothing goes into them, and they just sit there, and all they have to do is sit there and be famous. Let's see. Reality TV, by the way, apparently started with a show on PBS called An American Family. That's how far back that goes.
Good Lord, I don't even remember that. I remember.
Oh, by the way, may I give you a program recommendation?
Surely.
I'm happy to, and don't call me Shirley.
I said surely.
I know. It's a joke, Jim. It's a joke. There is a new series. I don't know if you saw the HBO series The Tudors.
Yeah.
It was a little over the top and played a little fast and loose with history, but there is a new PBS series called Wolf Hall.
I saw that last night.
And I've seen two episodes of it, and it's really, really quite well done. It's the ascendancy of Thomas Cromwell during the reign of Henry VIII. And
right.
Very, very well acted, well written, well done. Until the first episode, I never knew about the sweating sickness that ravaged Northern Europe.
Oh, yeah, that was on the original thing with, that came on a couple of years ago. I can't remember the guy's name. He was a very handsome man. He became sort of a little obese.
But to this day, nobody really knows what it was. But it would kill you. It would kill you in 24 hours.
Oh, yeah, and the king in the original series was so, you know, he had these thing called infusions and this, that, and the other. And in this particular series, Max von Sydow played Clement the Seventh, and so I can reference the two.
Well, isn't that what took down Henry VIII's older brother, the Crown Prince?
Arthur?
Yeah.
Probably. I don't think so. Maybe so. I don't know. I don't have the historical knowledge about Arthur. Arthur just came and went, and then, of course, right after that, what we remember about him was that Catherine of Aragon was married to his brother.
Yeah.
Henry VIII.
He was betrothed to Catherine of Aragon, and when Henry VIII ascended the throne, he took his brother's wife for his own, because they got a declaration that that Arthur had never consummated the marriage. And what a mistake that turned out to be.
No, it was a dispensation because it was critical to an alliance between Spain and England. And that's what the whole thing was about. And also to keep the two churches of the two countries from being loggerheads for one another. It was all political, and it was highly engineered by, of course, the See of Rome. They wanted to keep those two nations at peace, but that was not going to be the case. And, the person I felt, I don't know why, was Cardinal Wolsey.
Yeah, because he spent his lifetime doing the Tudors' dirty business. And,
exactly.
And
a
then,
butcher son who came and, you know, who rose through the ranks, and He was a capable statesman in light of the times. Now, I think he probably would have done a pretty good job considering the people who are doing our political business. But nonetheless, he did the best he could and died, whether by his own hand or whatever. Some say he died of natural causes. One version says he committed suicide, which I do not believe, but nonetheless, the poor man was just cast aside for somebody else who would do Henry VIII's bidding. He would thrive and wise, and that's what he determined to do, and there was Anne Boleyn and all that stuff. You see how long she lasted, 1,000 days if less. But the whole thing is, you know, these, what you referenced last night was very good. And I think Sir Thomas More is about to have his head on the block, too, for not being able to lend his conscience and sign his own name.
Yeah, I did notice that this new PBS program plays Thomas More as a little less than the sympathetic character he is portrayed to be in, say, Man for All Seasons.
Well, Thomas More lived in the time in which he lived, but nonetheless, eventually, his head wound up on Traitor's Gate.
Well, a lot of them did. I mean, so did Thomas Cromwell's.
Oh, they all did. As a matter of fact, I think even people who signed it, like the Duke of Norfolk, well, he would have died had Henry VIII not died the night before of syphilis. But, it's just a whole tawdry business. And, you know, you mentioned this continuing saga of the Tudors and this, that, and the other. But it certainly gives me a definite feeling about what it was like to live in merry old England.
I watch those period pieces, and the people who do properties and set decoration, and when they do it right, they do a very good job of reminding you that while your ancestors may have survived that era, you would not go back to it for love nor money.
Well, hell no. As Cromwell said to Sir Thomas More in A Man for All Seasons, and as Norfolk said to him too, oh, my God, this isn't Spain. This is England.
Yeah, I love the things that we can learn about the ancient world, because, you know, so much of the ancient world, the Romans, being the engineers that they were, had a lot of stuff figured out. And it's stuff that would ultimately be lost, and that's why we have the Dark Ages and whatever, up to, you know, stuff that wasn't rediscovered until, say, 150, you know, 180, 200 years ago. And this is a little bit gross, but how they managed their public toilets, the Romans. And, you know, it just goes to show the things that we take really for granted, like toilet paper.
Oh, yeah.
And hillbillies, you know, I grew up being told stories of how, you know, you'd save the Sears and Roebuck catalog from last year, because if you ripped out the page and you wadded it up and worked it around a little bit, it'd soften up okay and could be used for those purposes. But the Romans, by God, in their public restrooms, and you know, some of them have been discovered, they sat over the Cloaca Maxima, or at least led into it. There was water flushing through it at all times, and there was just a row of seats. You know, it was a bench, really. It was communal, with a hole every so often. And there was a channel running down the middle of the latrine.
Right.
And water ran in it constantly. And
they used a public sponge to wipe them.
And they used a sponge on a stick.
Wow.
And, of course, only the upper crust, what we would refer to today as the 1%, had their own sponges. But the thing is, then you would have to have a servant to carry your sponge for you. Because, really, you're a senator of Rome, and nice sponge you got there, Maximus.
Well, I guess they did what they thought they had to do. But that's all I can say. But going back to these things about Henry VIII, one thing that's always remained with me is what was said. And I think it was by Sir Thomas More. He said, the mistake that you have made with this king is you have told him what he could do and not what he should do. And I think that has come to me as a definite lesson to our own government and our own politicians and the people we send to Congress every year and elect every 4 years, every two.
Well, that's a commentary on power. And to the extent that it happens, does that come from A Man for All Seasons?
It did.
Yeah, I think that's the playwright's art of translating the ancient world to the modern one.
I think Robert Bolt did a wonderful job in doing that, and so did the director of that film in 1968.
Oh, it's a beautiful piece of film.
It's one of the most beautiful films I've ever seen. And
for that time period, though, to be, I still prefer Peter O'Toole and Katharine Hepburn in The Lion in Winter.
Well, of course, that was a magnificent piece of film as well. But nonetheless, this thing about the young girl that you were talking about and being lectured and being literally keel-hauled.
Yeah.
grabbed, but she's not leaving until I've given her a stern talking to, and the poor child's already in tears, Jim.
We're talking about, what, a 12 or 13-year-old girl?
Eighth grader, yeah, maybe 14 tops.
That's not good. That's not good. That's something that you would see in another regime 40 years ago. That's the type of thing that you'd see. And that is very frightening to me. It really is. Well, look, I said all I need to say. I enjoyed the show on Friday night. It was kind of fun, in a way.
Oh, our little round tables can be a hoot.
Well, I was glad to be a part of it for a few short hours.
One of these days we're going to get our either one of these days we'll raise enough money to get the Comrex absolutely fixed and get a couple more lines coming back in here, or we'll just get a second gizmo box.
Oh, yeah, that's great, and I hope so. And in pursuant to that, I hope you have seen The Imitation Game.
I have not yet. I do intend to, though.
I think it will be definitely worth your viewing.
Has it hit Netflix yet?
I have a DVD here.
Okay, well, I have to wait for it to hit one of the online streaming services.
Well, it's definitely worthy of viewing, and it took until 2013 for the Queen of England, or the firm, to acknowledge the attribute.
The brutal and tawdry fashion in which. Yeah, Alan Turing
ended his life. And he ended his life because he was a homosexual. And he had two choices. Either take some type of drug that would render him completely neutered,
yeah,
or go to Newgate Prison or wherever it was.
Yeah, and it's important to remember that, you know, that wasn't during the reign of Henry VIII. That was during the reign of Queen Elizabeth II.
Exactly. And this man's efforts, saved by a very limited, number of 14 million lives,
yeah,
when he was able to break those codes.
Right, but the reason I mentioned it wasn't Henry VIII, but was Elizabeth II, you know, the late 40s, early 50s, the reason I mentioned that, Jim, is because we've got people in this country, and I suppose some others, who, you know, constantly scream, "Ooh, Bruga Bruga, Arabs, Muslims, blah, 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 blah," you know, and eventually, and I see this kind of stuff. You'll see some right winger saying, "Well, the Muslims hate the homosexuals even more than we do. They kill them." And I'm thinking, wow, and you think that's something we've never done?
Yeah,
I mean it's not like there hasn't been a history of persecution. You mentioned heads spitted on Traitor's Gate. You can make an argument that our Muslim friends learned some of that during the Crusades, because we taught master classes. The Crusaders did. They taught master classes in brutality, especially with the so-called conquest of Jerusalem.
Well, you know, Bob, I've referenced a lot of things in which we taught other people in other parts of the world in different times, and they weren't good. And one more thing, and I'm going to let you go here quickly. In the United Kingdom, when did they change homosexuality from being a charge called gross indecency until realizing that this was not right?
What makes me think that you know, and it's probably 5 years ago?
No, I don't know when it was, but why did it take them that long to realize that this was not gross?
Well, I mean, the short answer.
I mean, look what happened to Oscar Wilde.
Yeah, and the short answer, Jim, is that it was government run by the dictates of religion.
I've never understood that, Bob. I've never understood it. And I guess, looking back on it, maybe we never will. But at least now, that law has been changed, that pilloried so many people from Alan Turing back to Oscar Wilde.
Yeah.
And on that note, you got other callers. You have other callers, excuse me. And if you have anything else to say to me, please. If not, I will leave you where I found you.
All right. You have a good evening, Jim. Take care.
You too.
Bye now.
Bye.
Our buddy Jim over Beckley Way. And let's keep it rolling. I suspect perhaps we may have our buddy John. Is that you, John?
Yeah. Oh, excuse me. Yeah, I fell asleep. Yeah, no, I didn't.
I have that effect on people.
Yeah, I know that droning voice.
Yeah, as long as you're not asleep at the wheel, so.
No, I am in Utah today, and there's no sleeping in Utah.
Oh, well, no, of course not. The sister wives might get away.
Yeah, that's it. There she goes. The sedge grass is hitting her dress. But, the course of the conversation brought up a couple of interesting things, which actually bounced off a couple of questions you had last week about the whole religious freedom restoration, stuff like that.
Right.
But what the pharmacist did is part of why that law has been pushed so damn hard.
Absolutely. And the funny thing is, these things pop up, John, but I remember doing a story similar to this way, way back when I was actually on terrestrial air and couldn't say booger or anything, back in Beckley in 2004.
Yeah. Well, you had Colburn, and this bounces off something that your Dr. Bill's been banging the drum about. You had Senator Colburn about a week ago or so, who brought up the whole, although he did it kind of in a veiled, left hand behind my back, watch my right hand wave, but he brought up the whole Constitutional Convention, states' rights thing on an interview he did on, I believe it was one of the Sunday shows. And, I mean, that's where these guys go. They know they can no longer get this stuff pushed by popular votes. And so they're trying to push it by coming at it from angles. They can't get their theocracy, at least currently, so they try to take it around the back door by saying, well, it's religious freedom. These people have a right to a conscience. It's the same shit that they did back in the Vietnam era. If someone stood up in the Vietnam era and said, I have a conscientious objection to going off and shooting somebody, well, you're going to prison. But you get some pharmacist now who says, well, I don't want to give you some drugs because you might hurt a little piece of protoplasm that wiggles its toes at 5 days and blinks its eyes at 4 weeks and does the hoopy-doopy in 18 days. That's all well and good. And these SOBs want their cake and eat it, too. And that's where we're headed.
Well, I agree on all counts, but I think there's something deeper here, or at least a larger meaning to be drawn from this, John. And that is, any time the right wing gets a chance, they will take a law that is passed for benign or even good purposes, like the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which was designed to protect minority faiths, or an act of conscience, such as, I don't want to go kill no brown people, and they'll turn it into a cudgel that the majority uses to pound on people it deems to be undesirable.
Yeah.
I mean, who would ever have...
No.
I mean, really, who would ever have imagined that conscience would be hauled out as an excuse to refuse to provide a woman with medication that will help her safely survive a miscarriage? I mean, just, because see, I share a story like that, and everybody goes, well, yeah, of course, it's damn fundies, and they're like that, and they're oppressive, and they're brutes, and they're ignorant, and they're stupid, and they're mean. But if you step back from it a couple of feet and just look at it, quivering there in the specimen dish, you go, shit, that's evil. We got to do something about that. But the majority evangelicals have somehow managed to convince themselves, if not the nation, that they're the ones being persecuted. When I haven't seen any strange fundamentalist fruit hanging from any local trees, have you?
Well, there was that state spot in Colorado I passed by that looked kind of weird, but otherwise, no, I haven't seen it.
Nobody's nailing up the fundies. Nobody's. I haven't seen the First Baptist Church of Bug Tussle with crime scene tape around it and planks nailed across the doorway. Because that could, and I'm careful about the use of never, but that could never happen under our Constitution as it presently exists. Because the religion industry in our constitutional system of governance will be protected above all things. The Fourth Amendment's coughing up blood on the back stoop, it's so near dead. The Fifth Amendment? Please. There are more exceptions than there are rules left. Jury trials? You know what? If the United States government wanted to quarter troops in homes, I'll bet you they could figure out a way to do it, because that's often cited as the most anachronistic of the Bill of Rights as they are enumerated. But we could probably do that. Oh, but oh my God, if you're to reach out and say, hey, listen, really, Creflo Dollar, you want a new jet, you pay taxes on it. And everybody from the Pope to Pat Robertson to people on the streets who think that he's a hustler will say, well, no, we've got to preserve Creflo Dollar's right to have a new jet so that the gospel of Jesus Christ can be spread by the good preachers. I mean, yeah, do you take any issue with that?
No. Not at all. You know, what's the polite way to say it? They want their world and you too. They want what they want, they want what's theirs, and they want what's yours.
Yeah, what's mine is mine is what, and what's yours is mine. I think there's a Grateful Dead song that addresses that.
Yeah, there's a little podcast I listen to sometimes in the mornings that he talks a lot about this concept he calls gimmitarianism. You know, it's like you.
Yeah, but see, when the right wing does it, they're not doing it under the name of community. They're doing it under the name of gimme.
But I see, now here's where I'll differentiate with you slightly on that. It is community.
Their community.
They don't give a shaving cream about your community. Because as far as, see, Christians particularly, but most of the religions are like this, Christians in particular, are incredibly insulated. They are an us versus them. And because their sainted savior was punished, and the greatest honor in their lives and their minds is to somehow be equated with Jesus. And so if they can claim to be persecuted or claim that they're getting mistreated in some way, then it makes them feel like, wow, you know, I'm just like Jesus, man. I'm, you know, and that to them, I listened to this damned description, and when I told it to me, I could not freaking believe it. And I had to go look the damn thing up. And I had a hell of a time because I'm not much of a technology guy. I'm like a Luddite with Tourette syndrome. But there is a guy, I think he's in Louisiana, and your news ninja could probably run it down faster than I can, but there's a guy that every freaking year on Easter, he actually drives nails through his hands.
Oh, no, the Philippines, you can't swing a cat by the tail in the Philippines without hitting somebody self-crucifying come Easter.
Oh, yeah. And they see it as the most honorable and most fantastic thing in the world. Now, most of us Americans, you know, even we've kind of grown up kind of soft, so you're not going to find many Americans doing that stuff. At least I don't think. But what do I know? I'm just an idiot on the truck. But it scares me to no end. Your boy Rubio just announced here a little while ago.
My boy Rubio. Yeah, I love you too, John.
Yeah, the hugs are all there. But you got to admit, it's going to make your life interesting in the next 18 months or so. But he announced, and I didn't listen to it. I only caught it. I was all on my way to the restroom at the truck stop, and I caught maybe like 15 seconds of it as I was passing by. And in those 15 seconds, you can take the entire thing that he said in those 15, 20 seconds and translate it to a single sentence.
Rubio, who lied, of course, about how his parents came to this country. At one point he was saying, you know, it was all because of Castro persecution, blah, 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 blah. But the fact of the matter was, his parents left Cuba before Castro took power. But you know what? You can lie your ass off. IOKIYAR. It's okay if you're a Republican. But yeah, and along the way, he guzzled a little water, and then he said that Hillary Clinton is a leader from yesterday.
Well, if you take in just the part I heard, now he probably drifted further along if I didn't hear it all, but the part that I heard, and the image that came into my mind, was back in the 2000 or 2012 election, one of the 2008, 2012, where you had this old lady who was screaming, "I want my country back!"
Oh, yeah.
And that was the vein that was running through that part that I was listening to. These people truly believe that their country doesn't exist anymore or is in danger of not existing. You've got people shooting people, you know, and going, he was a threat. I'm standing my ground, or whatever the meme of the week is. And there are days, and like I said, I travel in the South a lot, and there are days I go through there and I'm going, "You haven't died yet? Please. What do I need to do to shuffle you off the coil just a little faster?" Because, holy moly. Like I said, I was at the truck stop. There's a lot of local drivers and stuff. And you know the thing that scared me the most? Was all the cheering that was going on in the lounge. "Oh, yeah, this guy's telling Islam, bring him, you know, this is great, you know, we're going to get a truly, really, you know, truly God-fearing man." And about that time, like I said, 15 seconds, I walked by, I'm going, nothing but chills going down my back. Things that we thought maybe were beginning to fade into the sandbox of history, they just keep raising themselves back up. It's like the freaking Walking Dead, you know. Patriarchy and misogynism. Do you think maybe for the 21st century that this maybe is getting over with? But no. Every time you turn around, somebody's unshapped them with some more adrenaline, and up they come like the guy in that one movie. "I'm alive!" Ha! Back. More enlightened privilege, more opening theft, and it's like, you know, and I'll drift off this and then get off. But when you have people saying, "Oh, we're broke and we don't have money to pay for things," these people do not understand even how modern economics works.
Or any economics, the only economics they think they understand is gold bug economics.
"Yeah, we just need to stand with Rand and go back to the gold standard."
Yeah, that's all fine and dandy, and then, great, you've got unemployment at 23%, and, yeah, okay, understand that. But in the end result, your callers, gems, your multi-gems that you got going on there, you're up to your eyeballs with gems, I love it. They're right. They're so freaking right. These guys, this is not even this is not even nuts on a nutty scale. This is almost, if you would believe in religion, you'd almost think there was a guy with red horns, forked tail in the background pushing the buttons, because these guys, this is too well organized. The scripts are too similar. You don't get religious freedom restoration acts that pop up in 20-some states in the same damn year. You don't get, you know, stand your ground laws that pop up in 15 states in the same of legislative sessions. You don't get this stuff popping up. Somebody's talking. Somebody's pushing the buttons. And, you know, yeah, I went on a kind of a Dr. Bill binge over the weekend.
Aren't those fun? Aren't those fun?
Yeah. Well, for a while there, I was either bumping into the wrong site or something, because it hadn't been updated since like January.
There was a coding problem, John.
Yeah. Well, I noticed they popped up here a couple of days ago, and I was like, hello. And so I was like, play 2 hours. Play an hour and a half. Play. I went on like a Dr. Bill binge, and I was like, why can't we have guys like that being elected? It scares me that the only people we get to freaking vote for, and that includes Hillary Clinton, includes the rest of them, we only get to vote for the horses that the masters put up in the race. You want the white horse, you want the black horse. Well, let's see. Let's make it a little bit interesting. Let's put this little spotted Palomino up there and let him run. But he's an awful slow son of a bitch. But he'll mix things up a little bit. And I'm going, whatever happened to this, being able to vote for the people we wanted? But we can't because, oops, corporations are people, my friends, and their pocketbooks are much bigger than ours. But, oh well, I think I'm beginning to feel my soapbox talking, so I'm going to stop now before I get started.
No worries, John. Good to talk to you. Enjoy lovely Utah, Stan. I hear it's magnificent this time of year. Of course, it's still snowing. Of course, it's still snowing in the mountains.
No, actually, it's almost 90 degrees up here right now. At least it feels like it anyway.
Well, thank God there's no climate change. It'd be 120 if there was.
Yeah, but they were talking about the fact that the Salt Lake's drying up, and they're becoming worried about that. So, great.
Yeah,
gigantic marsh.
Yeah, it's gone from being the Great Salt Lake to the so-so Salt Lake.
Yeah, I mean, I drive by there on a once-in-a-while basis, and it's like, it used to be that you could theoretically take a rock and throw it, and you could hit water. Now, you better have a catapult or a slingshot.
Yeah, it's pretty depressing. I've flown in there, and it's pretty depressing to fly over, too.
Yeah, I'm looking at a mountain right now that has a little dusting of snow on the top, and the rest is pretty much all brown, and they're even talking about water restrictions up here, and I'm going, you know, great day in the morning. And that was an argument I had over the weekend with this bunch of ranchers down in Nevada that were just having themselves a freaking cow, because, I've had to cut my herd back by 20% in order to get heat so that you don't have enough water. And then I go, well, you know, he goes, well, where'd all the water go? I said, well, did it snow this year? Oh, no. Did it rain? Oh, no. Ta-da! And he looked at me like, and he actually said this, and I just died laughing. He goes, you one of them Obama lovers, aren't you?
Yep, dead giveaway, pointing out a drought. You're probably in favor of that drought, because that drought was brought on by Kenyan Muslim you slurper wizardry. I mean, you saw the picture.
Yeah.
You saw the picture of him shooting the gay rainbow out of his hand, turning the whole of Jamaica gay, right?
Yeah, they had an actual talk about that today, about the fact that because he's now passed the midterms, and he's basically just cruising to the last couple of years of his presidency.
Well, no, he's just trolling the weirdos now.
Yeah, he's just
punking the right wing at every turn. He spoke to while he was in Jamaica, he spoke to a youth group, and he said, "Hello, Jamaica Massive, Wagwan Jamaica," and he said it like that. And they went wild, of course.
and the wing nuts in this country went wilder.
Oh, yeah. Well, that dovetails right into that chick you had on earlier. That was why we didn't talk about English. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Sharia allegiance pledge. And John, stay safe, my friend. Good to hear from you.
Later, Gator.
All right, bye now. Our buddy John calling from the wilds of the world behind the Zion Curtain. Over to the Herald line, also known as the Skype line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
It's, hey.
Mike here from South Carolina stand. Good to talk to you again.
Hey, Mike. Good to hear from you.
Hey, I agree with John. Yeah, your previous caller. I do see the you know, how with the announcement of Rubio here, we've got two corporate morons who have announced in as many days. I know, you know, and of course I do include Hillary in that, but you know, I don't really have anything against Hillary other than her stand on all of the issues. But other than that, you know, from having talked to you before, you know that I would rather see somebody in there that would actually make some changes.
Sure. I mean, if I could pull the cork out of the bottle and make the genie pop out, and I could get and I could get President Sanders and Vice President Warren, or President Sanders and Vice President Kucinich,
yeah,
or any of the, I'd do it in a minute. But the reality, and I keep hammering on this since we're in the apparently the presidential political season now, and it's all official and everything.
Oh yeah.
There is not going to be,
I hear you,
a viable progressive candidate for president.
Yeah.
Well, emphasis, you know, on the word viable. Now, I mean, we can run sparkle pony candidates till hell freezes over. Ain't none of them never gonna get elected.
Because
I'm not saying that because their politics are wrong or because the nature of the American people. I'm saying it because of the constitutional nature of the system.
I understand, and you know, I'm not gonna go on Hillary bash or anything, but you know, actually you mentioned Ralph, but if you actually went over to Common Dreams today, Chris Hedges, you ever read his article?
Oh, I read Chris all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he's got one out today. It says, for Ralph Nader, defiance is a way of life. That was his article today. It came out Monday today. And it's about, you know, Ralph and his previous runs for president, and the book that he wrote about his unanswered letters to the president of both parties. You know, the ones he wrote to Obama, the ones he wrote to Bush, and over the last 16 years, you know, or 15 years, he hasn't had any answers to these letters he wrote. But it's a really good article. Some of your people might want to, you know, take a look at it when they get a chance. It's really interesting. But
Ralph sent me screaming into the night recently, Mike, when he said that Rand Paul really might present the opportunity for liberals and progressives to unite with a small government libertarian and really bring about some change. I mean, that's where Agnes has to come and keep me from just, you know, to start tearing off the clothes and screaming. And
I understand, but then again, I want you to think about this, okay? And I've listened to your program. I actually tried to get on the forced discussion on Friday, but I didn't get there. But I know that some of the people, you know, have basically were questioning why there were progressives out there who actually supported Rand Paul, okay? You know, and I have the same question. I don't understand why they would support him either. but I do understand that they support him because he actually says some of the things that progressives in this country should say. And that's why, you know, people that are progressive are going to have a lot more in common with his rhetoric than they are with Hillary Clinton. I mean, you don't really think that Hillary Clinton is actually going to do something about mountaintop removal, do you? Really?
It all begins with passage of the AIC Act.
And then, okay. and let's put it this way. I think there's a better chance of her signing, if it's passed by both houses, there's a better chance of it being signed into law by her than by Rand Paul, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, Jeb Bush.
No doubt that if you're looking at possibilities and probabilities, that's all true. But what is the real chance you think that would pass a Republican Senate and House?
There's a better chance than you might. Well, on the Senate side, there's a better chance than you might think, and that's part of our ongoing campaign right now.
I do. I have supported so many, different ones of these, and I've reached a point where I actually quit doing petitions anymore, because I've never seen anything come of any of the ones that I participated in. And I finally said, you know what? It's almost, seems to me like to be a waste.
Well, and I'm kind of worn out on petitions too. But this isn't a vacuous petition. This is a petition.
Yeah.
This is a petition with a purpose. This is a petition.
Exactly.
This is a petition that is designed specifically to be used to advance this piece of legislation. It's not
exactly.
because God knows, Mike. I don't know how many end mountaintop removal petitions I've signed, some more literate than others.
Well.
And the fact of the matter is, if it just says, tell President Obama end mountaintop removal, I know that it hasn't really been thought out. But if you go and you read this credo petition, you can see that an absolute boatload of work went into it. And I think, I think we're seeing I think we're seeing the results in the amazing amount of support that this is getting. I mean, I've been watching it since it launched, and we're at nearly 55,000 signatures now.
Well, don't get me wrong. I'll sign a petition, but all I'm saying is that in today's climate, with either party in control of anything, I don't think we're going to see any of that pass. Well, here's a little example. How many years have we waited for Barack Obama to say no to lighting the biggest fuse to the carbon bomb in the world with a pipeline? How long have we waited for Barack Obama to?
Oh, I know, and it very well might have sunk his 2012 reelection bid had he done it. So, and what I'm saying is that I understand the politics behind it. And yet, without ever overtly saying no, he let the dummies in the House put a bill together, which he then just vetoed.
And he was actually and probably still is for big oil and more coal and.
Oh, sure. I well remember when he squired around this area. Didn't do any good because the folks in Appalachia still. I don't care what he said. Wants us to be the Saudi Arabia coal. That black man kissed my white ass.
Well, one of the things that bothered me about Barack Obama, and don't get me wrong, let me just give you a little history here. I thought the Bush administration from when he was first illegally put in office back in 2000 by the Supreme Court, okay? I fought this and fought this all those years. I supported the Democratic Party and tried to put people, of conscience and stuff in office. And it wasn't until we actually, through a lot of blood, sweat, tears, we finally got Barack Obama elected in 2008 that I thought that, this is a chance for America to turn the corner. If Barack Obama were to just take a cue from Roosevelt and start doing some things, this world could be a wholly different place. Well, that totally came crashing down.
Well, there's a certain element of truth in that. But, Mike, he had a majority in the House in 2009 and 2010. He had a majority in the Senate, sort of, in 2010, but that majority included Ben Hare from Nebraska and Mary Landrieu and Joe Manchin, or maybe not Joe Manchin, but Blanche Lincoln and a bunch of Democratic mugwumps that Harry Reid could not get to all vote together as a block. And as long as the As long as the Republicans were imposing a 60-vote threshold, nothing was going to get done. See,
yeah,
that
if you want to
compare Barack Obama to FDR, for instance, and I don't think that's a fair fight, because I mean we remember when Barack Obama said his summer reading list was going to include reading the biography of that greasy-headed old B movie actor who got upstaged by a monkey.
That's exactly right.
But if you want to make that 1-to-1 comparison, Mike, you can. But you have to start with the fact that FDR had a great big whopping majority in both houses of the Congress who were scared to death that the people with the pitchforks and the torches were going to come after their white asses and start skewering and have a weenie roast. A real one.
You know, when Barack Obama was running for president, I talked with many on many talk show radios to help spread the word about this candidacy and stuff. And I kept telling him about how he was taking only small donations and stuff from individuals. And, of course, before it was over, you know, he decided to turn down his federal funding and go ahead and get all the money he could from corporate America. And he did, okay? And look at it this way. I fought all the fights up until 2008. Look who Barack Obama chose as his running mate. Joe Biden. Where is Biden from? Delaware. What was one of Joe Biden's major piss-offs of the progressive group? He went along with the Republicans on their bankruptcy bill that, among other things, gave credit card companies the right to charge 35% interest to people. Okay, another corporate crony that is serving as vice president. If you even go back to the Bush election of 2000, okay, when the election was outright stolen from Al Gore, who was Al Gore's running mate? You remember?
Holy Joe Lieberman.
That's exactly right. The old dual citizenship Joe Lieberman, who would have done anything in his power to do whatever it takes for Israel and against the countries in the Middle East. Well, what I'm getting down to is wait till you see who Hillary Clinton decides her running mate's going to be.
Oh, Joe Manchin wants it so bad he can taste it. He's got the hair. He's got the tan. He's ready.
We have got.
Except he's also got a $2 million lawsuit against him by his own brother, which kind of sucks for Joe.
Before I broke down and supported Obama in 2008, okay, during the primaries, I actually wanted somebody else for president, and that was John Edwards. Okay.
Wouldn't we have loved that impeachment proceeding?
Well, you know, not because he was from South Carolina or anything, but because he actually stood up and talked about reining in the corporations. Well, you see where that got him, you know. And I wouldn't be surprised to see that some of that stuff was set up. I can't speak to that personally, but you know, this stuff happens, you know, in politics. People are set up, and then that's used. Whatever happens is used against them. But he did talk the language of actually reining in corporate America, and so that wasn't going to fly. That's kind of like his running for the Democratic nomination was kind of like Rand Paul running for the Republican nomination. By the way, in South Carolina here, since we're like the first Southern state primary this year, we get the ads already. Okay, I mean, they're already starting. As soon as Rand Paul announced that he was running for president, they're running, the Republican Party and stuff is running attack ads against him on television right now. Really interesting. You should see some of these talking about how he supports Obama in his negotiations with Iran, and that Rand Paul said that Rand Paul said that one Iranian bomb, you know, wouldn't threaten security. And of course, you know, they're totally against all that. They're sure that even one bomb in the hands of the Iranians would be the end of the world. But you know, that's the crutch of their attack ads against Rand Paul. But not that I'm a Rand Paul supporter. I'm not. All I was trying to tell you is
No. I get it, but
I can understand how people, you know, would gravitate towards somebody that talks the talk even though
yeah, if they are not perceptive enough to look behind it. I mean, really, Ralph Nader thinks progressives are going to get behind a guy who wants to wipe out Title 8 housing or Section 8 housing?
Yeah.
Progressives are going to get behind somebody that wants to wipe out the Department of Education?
Yeah, but see, you're talking about progressives on a much deeper level than what they do, because you know anybody that says anything that's liberal, you know they're considered
right. I mean, it's been my experience that the progressives who stand with Rand are progressive insofar as they want dope legalized everywhere, and so do I. But I'm not willing to sacrifice Granny's Social Security so that some 29-year-old hipster can spark up on the streets of Peoria.
And I understand exactly what you're saying. And here's the thing about it, though. If you go back to the Obama election and what he talked about, I mean, he talked about card check and supporting all of the unions and stuff. And the first opportunity that he had, like he said, he would put on his tennis shoes and go walk the picket line. What did he do? What did he do when
he stayed? He stayed right the hell away from Wisconsin.
He stayed right goddamn where he was. And he didn't go anywhere and didn't open his mouth about a damn thing.
And that is
two-faced bullshit.
It was. Of course, the other argument was that would have made that whole movement about him instead of the people, and he wanted it to be people power. Oh. And that may be just a self-serving load of pucky.
That's exactly the way.
But the other thing is, I do remember things like his. There were actual policy positions put out at the beginning of the Obama presidency that just died, and they didn't just die because they were terrible ideas. They died because they were killed, Mike. And I mean, and this is not the president not sure defense hour. That ain't me. That's not my job. But. He wanted to expand interstate passenger rail, and I don't know any progressives that don't think that's a great idea. And he had a plan to give, and again, just like with the Medicaid expansion, free money to the states. And Scott Walker in Wisconsin said, "I don't want no free money." I mean, it's like the opposite of idiocracy. He was sitting. I don't like money. Because I remember it so well, there was a plant that had already located in Wisconsin that was up and running to manufacture passenger rail cars, hundreds of jobs in Wisconsin, and Scott Walker, the jobs governor, said, get out! And Ohio did the same thing to it. How do you lay that on? You can't lay that on Barack Obama's doorstep. You just can't.
We've got a Republican governor here, Nikki Haley.
Nimrata. We use her proper name on this program. Her name is Nimrata.
Yeah, who refused to expand Medicaid here, turning down untold billions of dollars that could have helped everybody in the state. And now we're one of the states who are waiting on the Supreme Court decision to determine whether or not we get to keep our Obamacare or not, because of some linguistics in the law that was passed, okay? Nothing substantial. It's just the way a few words were written in the health care law, and now the Supreme Court's going to examine this and you know, decide whether or not those of us here in this state and probably 20 other states actually get to keep our health care, you know. But any way you cut it, go back and look who Obama put in his cabinet as soon as he came in to office. Goldman Sachs. Timothy Geithner? Really?
Rahm Emanuel, please. I mean,
yeah, these are the people you're going to put in your cabinet, and you're going to be a progressive leader in this country, and you're going to do something that's not stroking the corporations? Really? Come on. We need somebody different. We don't need another Bush. We don't need another Clinton.
But Mike, you're not going to get it. You're not going to get somebody different. Because let's be clear. I want to lay out
as many dream tickets as possible. Let's say it's Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders on the ticket. They are going to get their asses handed to them. Okay?
And
Elizabeth Warren, Sherrod Brown, ass handed to them. Pick it, because, I know it must sound simplistic when I say it, but I have a reason for saying it. Crumbling empires do not tolerate progressive politics. And this is most assuredly a crumbling empire.
Absolutely is. I agree with you absolutely 100%. And here's the thing I say about it, though. I mean, we can continue to go and we can vote for these corporate candidates that are selected for us before we ever get a chance to choose one. We can do that, okay? But it's like Einstein said about the definition of insanity. You keep doing the same thing over and over, expecting a different result. When you get to the election in 2016 and you have the choices that the moneyed interests have allowed you to pick one or the other, and it doesn't matter to them which one you pick, because they're going to get what they want, what they've contracted to get with these people anyway. But until something changes and we actually have a real democracy and real choices, we're going to hell in a handbasket. And the real problem with this is we've already crossed the Rubicon. We've passed the point of no return when our Supreme Court ruled in Citizens United and in another related case where people, moneyed interests can put all the money, and corporations can put all the money they want into these elections, because that ensures that we will never, ever get a chance to put anybody in there that matters anymore. They can actually represent the people. They can actually represent somebody besides the 1%. It's not going to happen unless we make a change. That's all.
Right, I understand, Mike. But what is the change we can make in a first pass? In a first past the post system, what's the change we can make? Everybody's going to go vote green.
When they
have a struggle to even get on the ballot.
You know, the only way that it can be done, Bob, and that is you have to get the young people and progressives. Progressives are actually shut out. I don't care who they vote for, but you have to get a candidate that young people and progressives can get behind. Young people have a lot of reason to support somebody other than the people that we've had up there all
the time. I agree, but let me just throw out a couple of realities, because I've been watching progressive politics for a very long time, Mike. As I'm sure you have.
Yeah, me too.
And if our dream progressive gets the presidential nomination, again, we'll say it's Elizabeth Warren. 15 milliseconds after she's been nominated and convention assembled, the internet will proliferate with progressives saying, I hate her. She said something nice about Israel once. Okay, I'm just using that as an example.
And I understand where you're coming from.
And because, you know, we're not herding cats over here. We're butterfly wrangling.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a reality. Kids, short of conscription, nothing is going to motivate kids. And I'm going to say something that's really, I'm going to say something now, Mike, that is really dark and creepy and makes me, I said on Facebook the other day, I feared I'm going to spend the next 10 years, either year and a half or 10 years broadcasting from a jug of bleach, just because of how dirty some of this stuff makes me feel. But I'll say this much. If you go back and you read the Project for a New American Century, those guys came up with that as a means of maintaining American hegemony and particularly Republican power in the empire. With me still?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm totally with you.
All right. Well, you can say the same thing about progressivism in this country. The real progressive turn, if you sit and you just look at the 20th century, you get McKinley, who was staunchly conservative, who
had T.R. as his running mate. T.R. comes in after McKinley dies and does some progressive things, but nothing that would ever upset the apple cart. And then, by the time the First World War rolls around, he's a bloodthirsty war hawk. Of course, he was during his presidency, too. Okay, so then you get Wilson, and then you get Harding, Coolidge, and Hoover, who are as close to the Bush administration's excesses and the Reagan administration's whoop-de-doo economic excesses as we've ever had, and that causes a great big economic burn down, otherwise known as the Great Depression. No Great Depression, you get a second term of Herbert Hoover,
and God
knows who else after that. Because the reason I say all of this is only crises, really serious crises, allow progressive change in this country.
Yeah,
and just let me finish.
Okay.
The crises that have come around in the last few years have been much better managed by the right than by the so-called left. You get the post-Kennedy assassination crisis, you get the post-Depression crisis. Well, progressivism needs, just as the Project for a New American Century said they needed another Pearl Harbor, progressivism needs something that will make once and for all obvious that the other way ain't working, ain't ever gonna work. And then we might get a 5-year window to get some shit done, Mike. And that's about it. 5 years.
Therein lies the real problem, because we have exactly that in the 2008 financial meltdown.
I agree. That's why I said the other side manages crises far better than do we.
But we had the reins at the time, and we're the ones that failed to do anything. But I want to say this, Bob. Listen,
I got to get out of here.
I like your listeners. You and I are pretty much the same. I'm a full-blown atheist. I can tolerate agnostics, but I don't have any tolerance, really, for fundamentalists and stuff of any stripe. And, these things that we share in common and understanding of these things, I think maybe just in a couple of elections that you're going to be at the same place I'm at right now.
Oh, I don't know that I'm not. I don't know that I'm not now, Mike. I come at it from a different angle. I got to get out of here, though. It's a good conversation, man. Thank you very kindly for making the call.
I love you, your listeners.
All right.
I love you.
Bye now.
Take care.
Our buddy Mike calling from South Carolina, Stan. We really do have to get out of here in a drop dead hurry. I want to thank Mark in Florida for jumping into the fundraising foray this evening. We have $465 to go on the week. And the sooner we get that taken care of, the better off we are. Anybody wanting to jump in and help with our anonymous donor and Mark and Harold this evening, it's much appreciated. Thanks, everybody. Have a good night. Back tomorrow for Titanic Tuesday. See ya.